This podcast was first broadcast on Mix 92.6. Go to mix92.6.com to find more Environment Matters podcasts and, if you enjoy what we do, to find out how you can support the station, which is run entirely by volunteers. I hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to Environment Matters with me, Amanda Yorworth. Environment Matters is the show that brings you news on issues of sustainability and the environment from around Hertfordshire and from further afield. Now, last Wednesday, the consultation opened on the latest draft of St Albans District local plan. So what's a local plan? Well, it's a blueprint for the area's built environment that includes land for future businesses, infrastructure and housing developments. In this case, for the years up to 2040, so quite a long time there. Now, if you go to the St Albans District Council website, you'll find a link to the draft local plan, which is a chunky 149 pages plus supporting documents. There's a quick explanatory video and links so that you can give your feedback. Now, this is super important. So who better to explain everything about St Albans' draft local plan to us than council leader, Councillor Chris White. Councillor White, thank you so much for joining me. So can we start with why we need a local plan and why you think we need one now? Now, a number of listeners have got in touch to say that they think there would be benefits in waiting. For example, Nadia asks, why you've included so much greenbelt land for building on, whereas if you'd waited a bit, the government national planning policy framework with updated housing requirement figures would mean we'd have less houses to find space for. And then a similar question from Nick. He says, why the council chose to use a 2014 census number and projections for the population, which imply very large numbers of housing need to be built, thus threatening the greenbelt. Michael Gove says that these targets are not compulsory. Why not use the 2021 numbers, which require a quarter of the houses, or put off the plan until the government comes out with new guideline, which they have said they will do? So could you help us with that, please?
My goodness, yes, there's quite a lot going on here. First of all, we're not launching the local plan. We're launching the first consultation on the local plan. We're a long way off from having a local plan. The earliest possible date is 2025, and that's optimistic. And between the current consultation and the next consultation, that's the second one, it's called the Regulation 19 consultation, much will change regardless of changes in government policy. So we've got plenty of time to absorb changes in government policy, but getting on with it is essential for a very, very stark reason, and that is we have the oldest local plan in the country, and the government has made it very clear to us in writing that if we don't keep moving, they will take it over. And I don't think we want central government deciding on greenbelt in St Albans or on sites in St Albans. That's just too horrible to contemplate. So we keep moving and we listen to the people. Now, this idea that Michael Gove has said the figures are no longer compulsory is the situation it's always been. It's a stupid game the government plays. It says, oh, no, no, we like. But you know full well that when this plan goes before the government's own inspectors, if you're using the wrong numbers, they throw it out. They say it's not sound. It's not realistic, so go away. So you have to use the numbers you're given. We didn't choose 2014, stupid date. 2018 is a much better set of figures. It would more or less get rid of the need to use the green belt. And we're still hoping that those figures will be inserted, in which case it's obvious what we have to do, and I'm looking forward to that. The caveat I have to give is that there is no reason to suppose that the figures will change, because there could be a change of government, and certainly the Labour Party is making noises which suggest that they are not going to be reducing any housing target numbers. And if that's the case, then we may be hoping for something which will actually never happen. We have checked and rechecked what the position is. Only this month, July, Daisy Cooper asked a question to the relevant minister saying, can we use Michael Gove's musings, or do we have to stick to the existing NPPF, the National Blueprint? And we were told very firmly that nothing has changed and that Michael Gove's comments were just comments, and there's a consultation going on, but we're not there yet. So we're told we have to use those figures. It's not our choice. I wish it were. What a stupid way of making plans, frankly.
So do you have sympathy for local people who are horrified to see green fields and woods near them earmarked for building?
I do. I mean, you can make minor arguments and say, well, that's not worth keeping, and you can tidy up the green belt. We'd all accept that. But, massive sympathy. It's a stupid position to be in. And it just shows, to take the broader point, we are really poor in this country at treating local government as local and sovereign. We're constantly working within constraints, and you and I have had discussions about budgets in the past, or with your colleagues, and how we're constrained here. This is another example of how much we're constrained by a set of rules, and it was made very clear to us when we re-embarked on a local plan that it's a game you have to play. You have to play by the rules. If you do that, you'll get it agreed. And once it's agreed, okay, you may have to lose a green belt, and that's bad, but at least you're not dealing with the current situation where, frankly, it's an open city. You know, anyone can come along, put in a planning application anywhere. The council can turn it down. It gets appealed, it goes to inspectors, and they say, we'll have an up-to-date local plan. So tough, mate. There's no reason not to grant it. So we are really vulnerable, and there are lots of instances. Bullens Green was a particularly celebrated one locally, where the door is wide open to developers. And this is the device to stop that.
So you're giving us your assurance that the new housing figures do come out before the local plan is finalised. And they are lower, that you will be able to, and you will take greenbelt areas out of the areas for buildings.
Yep, absolutely, can't wait. And the advantage of ploughing on is that if we waited, then we would be another year behind. Whereas if we're having started the process, particularly over the next year, which is when we will know for certain whether changes will happen and what they will be, it means we can keep to the original timetable, and the sooner we get in, basically our defences against the developers, let's call it 2025, the better. Leading it to 2026, another year of depredation, another year of loss of greenbelt as well.
Okay. Right. Now, you've said that a commitment to tackle the climate emergency is at the heart of the draft local plan, with new developments required to be sustainable and improve biodiversity. And this is something that's concerning listener Graham, who says, I would like to know whether measures to enhance biodiversity, such as swift bricks and bat boxes, will be mandated in all new developments. This is happening in other local authority areas. So can you just tell us a bit about the sustainability measures and the measures to improve biodiversity that will be required, you say, in new developments?
Yeah, I mean, I would advise listeners to go to chapter 2, and not at this minute, but do get hold of the whole document, read the whole thing through, not just the sites, but also the chapters of policy. And chapter 2 is climate emergency, and the fact is chapter 2, and obviously chapter 1 is the introduction, chapter 2 is a climate emergency. It shows how significant it is, and strategic policy SP2, sorry about the bureaucracy, but this is a bureaucratic process. The council will support proposals that help combat climate change. Where appropriate, development proposals will need to demonstrate mitigation and adaptation to climate change. I'm summarising here, so there's other words there. Prioritise the development of previously developed land, be designed to improve resilience to climate change, use the most sustainable locations for growth, and so minimising the need to travel while encouraging the use of walking, cycling and public transport, provide on-site renewables, high standards of energy efficiency and low carbon energy. I could go on, but I think you can see the thrust of this. And some people say, well, can't you make the language stronger? You don't need to. The point is, a planning application comes in. If that is the policy, then the councillors or the officers of the council can say, well, I'm sorry, you're nowhere near doing that, so go away. Then it goes to appeal, and the inspectors' attention is drawn to this, and they say, no, it's in the local plan. Your development does not respond to the climate emergency as required. So that is the sort of thing which will make a very real difference. And there's lots more detail about that. One of the details that questioner mentioned is bat boxes, swifts. I've been asked for swift bricks. We don't mention swift bricks, but we do mention swifts. So encouraging swift nesting and so forth. So that is in there. But can I also say, Amanda, that this is a consultation. It's a real, real consultation. If you read this and think, it's not quite good enough, really not happy with it, write in. Please write in. It will be looked at. It has to be looked at by law. If I had a monopoly of wisdom, then I'd be a very wealthy man. I don't have a monopoly of wisdom. And whilst the officers of the council are very good, nor do they, and they'd be the first to admit it, the wisdom comes from the people. So we need to have this feedback. If you think it's not good enough, tell us.
Okay. And would you be up to putting in very specific things like all new houses must include swift bricks, new fences must have hedgehog holes in them, for example?
Yes, some of that's already there. So yes, it can be very specific. What I read out was an early policy. As you get further on into it, then you find huge amounts of detail appear. You know, accessibility standards in terms of green space and new green space provision, it goes down to quantity per square meter, that sort of thing. It can be really specific. And if it doesn't work that way, then we'll try and make it work.
Right. Okay, then. So you've got a little video about the local plan that you have on your website, very useful. And you say in that video that you want to preserve and enhance what's good about the district. Now, I know that wildlife enthusiasts will be absolutely devastated to see that the Bedman Lane site is included for house building, as they know it to be an absolutely valuable remnant of chalk grassland that's home to rare orchids growing there. What's the point in adding more biodiversity in new developments if you're going to allow the destruction of something as unique and valuable as that?
Well, the first answer is there probably isn't a point. There may be a reason. When people look at this and see things they don't like, my request is write in, not saying you don't like it, because that's not going to get you anywhere. You know, the number of people who write in, so I swear I walk my dog, well, you know, so what? But if you've got a technical reason, orchids, there's a site, not in the plan, but there is a place, I should say, rather than site, in St Albans, which has got an extraordinary quantity of dragonflies. Right in, because the fact that these sites are there doesn't mean it's fixed in stone. Otherwise, it's not a consultation. It will change, and the change will occur when people write in. The worst possible thing that could happen now is for 10 people to write in with a hobby horse. We need 1,000 people to write in with a hobby horse. Just write it in, because it will improve it. And I say this, 12 months between currently Regulation 18 and Regulation 19, which takes us much closer to submission, is a time of massive change, and sites will come out possibly for reasons like this.
Right. Okay. So I think you've partly answered this question, but Anthony wants to know how much weight is given to what current citizens want rather than to anyone else or to commercial interests or to other bodies, including governmental ones. Are you really listening to what we say?
Yes, and we have to. I can make the political statement that we want to listen, but we have to anyway, which I think is possibly more reassuring. Various people will respond, and we want various people to respond. Not just the public. We want the formal response from the county council on highways. Some of the sites have got a bit of a question mark. You know, informally, the county council said about one or two sites that there's no showstoppers there. But, you know, I've got members of my group who think, well, I think there may be a showstopper. So we need a definitive analysis of highways consequences of certain sites from the county council, done properly, not just a sort of finger in the air, but a technical analysis, and this is their opportunity to do so. The same applies to national highways, who tend not to get involved in the informal drafting stages, but will come in about pressure on certain highways, and you've got various other statutory consultees, and of course the normal pressure groups who will come in, and we want to hear from all of them. The point is to get the right answer. I don't care who says it. If it's demonstrable that something is wrong, all could be made better. And does it matter who says it? Clearly, evidence is evidence, and technical evidence from a technical authority will carry more weight than surmise. And it would be wrong for that not to be the case. But this is for the people. This now belongs to the people. It's one of the reasons why all these appeals to defer it didn't make any sense. And there's some people saying, well, we haven't had time to look at to digest it. Well, it doesn't matter, because this is a consultation. We're not going to consult on a consultation. We're just going to do the consultation and listen to people. I've not got a site in there in my ward. I think, really? Is that really sensible? I will probably write it, and so I think that may cause over-densification.
All right. Well, that's interesting to hear. So the consultation closes on the 25th of September. So we've got a little while to do this, even if we are off on holiday. What have you done to try and make it easier for us to respond?
Well, we can always do more. So obviously we've issued a press release, and I'm talking to you. If you go online for the district council, it is there, plus other documents for you to look at, which are ancillary to it, or indeed even belong to other authorities. And we are doing a number of events, roadshows and exhibitions. I'll give a couple of examples. I'll not read them all out because that doesn't make good radio. But Coneyheath Village Hall on the 2nd of September for 6 hours. Redbourne Parish Centre for 6 hours on Monday the 4th of September. And that 6 hours runs through the afternoon and into the evening, allowing for people working. And don't think for a moment, if you don't go to one of these roadshows, you're not allowed to respond. It's just another way of engaging. It's going to be in all the libraries, and we are reviewing our communication system anyway as we speak. Other means of communication.
Okay, well, we had a question from a younger listener, Hannah, who says, how are you going to make sure that we all know about this consultation? And she did say, you're not just going to put it on Facebook where older people will see it.
She's entirely right. So Facebook is a place we would use, but we must use other means as well. We will use Twitter, because we do. I'm exploring already with officers of the council using Threads, because I'm now a Threads user. And obviously more seriously linked to Instagram, because we must use things like those forms of social media that young people are likely to do. But on top of that, I think councillors have got to take their role seriously, their communications with residents, and to encourage people to respond. I mean, sorry to bang on about this. One of the dangers in modern society is people have a good moan to each other and say, isn't that awful, stupid, you know, Bedman Lane, idiots. If you think we're idiots, write and tell us. Don't just write to each other, because we won't know. So, yeah, respond, and tell everybody. Use all the means you can. Everyone, all hands on deck for this.
Councillor White, thank you very much indeed for telling us about that.
Thank you.
I was talking there to Councillor Chris White, leader of St Albans District Council. Now, the consultation period closes on the 25th of September, and I'll ensure that a link to the draft local plan, the introductory video and the consultation is included in the notes that go with the podcast of this show and that you will find on the podcast page of mix926.com. Let's make sure that everyone has their say, so do respond yourself and do share with your friends and family and encourage them to respond. Now, you can get in touch via email. I'm on amanda.yorworth@mix926.com, or look out for Environment Matters on Mix 92.6 on Twitter and Facebook. I'm going to be back at the same time next week, when I'll be learning about coffee from Mo from Sustain Coffee in Old Hatfield. So if you drink coffee, then be sure to listen in. Until then, thank you for listening.